Good morning, everyone, and very illustrious, esteemed panel here. You've obviously met Susan on my right. Next to Susan is Abby. Abby was telling me she's originally from Lagos, now lives in Cairo. I was saying that as a student, I worked in Cairo for a couple of winters at the Gezira Sporting Club, so I know the city quite well. But obviously has a very influential role as COO of the African Football Confederation. So delighted to have you with us.
Thanks.
Hill Caro, just flown in from Geneva. FISU, was it the FISU AGM or the, I think it's...
Their General Assembly.
General Assembly. He said the voting yesterday took from 9.30 in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So obviously they might have good governance by that process. But Hill is the Chief Executive of the 2029 FISU event, which has been held in North Carolina in the USA. And a good friend from, not seeing John for many years now, who's now working for AEG in London, originally from South Africa, and spent a few years here at the Hydro in Glasgow, and now looks after the O2, which is obviously one of the most prestigious music, entertainment, sporting, cultural venues in the world, and based in London. So, very, very good panel. We'll hopefully have some time to open you up for questions as we move on. But we've got one initial question to all the panel, which is, how can major international events stay relevant, flexible, credible, and consumable? John, do you want to kick off?
Well, you know, what we've discovered from COVID is that the more you understand the data... Thank you. I work in the live entertainment industry, and I don't know how a microphone works. Yeah, what I was going to say, it's more important than ever to just understand the data and to understand customers and to understand the environment. And we've really learned that post-COVID. You know, the world is just changing so much. What we require to do and deliver at events is just so much more than we would ever have imagined. So I think the simple answer to your question is understand the data, understand what the world is doing around you, understand your customers, and then the hard part is developing a plan to respond to that.
Hill, from your perspective?
Well, I think out of COVID, more than ever, people want events. And so I think that's going to help sustain events going forward. Yes, they're more complicated and everything from security to health standards, athlete welfare, et cetera. But I think the driving force is that we want them more than ever. It's more important than ever, I think, for people to get together. We've seen, I think, with what's happening in terms of the award of events going forward, there's still a great deal of enthusiasm, interest, and investment in events. So I think we'll have to adapt as we go along, but the future is bright.
Abby?
Yeah, I would agree with both of those. And I think also the challenges and the opportunities that we have in Africa are also... It's kind of a double-edged sword, I suppose, in respect of we're developing in many ways in certain parts of Africa, obviously South Africa, very different kettle of fish to the rest. However, we have a unique opportunity to look at sustainability as we grow. And I think there are some of the challenges and opportunities that we face when we're changing and developing our events across the continent in football.
Susan?
Thanks very much, Paul. I think our experience in Glasgow is that back to John's point, everybody does want events to happen, that kind of spirit of coming together, that kind of being together, experiencing something together has really grown post-COVID. And however, one of the things that has changed is maybe what is that experience? And so people want to have a part of the event more. So the question of relevance, I think, is as much about, so what does an event experience mean? So we can talk about volunteering in Glasgow. We have a massive a kind of success rate to date in encouraging people to actually become involved in the event. So I think that's maybe some of the changes. Actually, people don't want just to watch an event. They want to be part of the event.
I thought David made two interesting comments. One was about building mountains, which, you know, if we look back and think about what Sochi did in 2014 around the Winter Olympics and even what Saudi are doing around the Asian Winter Games in, I think it's 28 or 29. And then he posed a question to all of us, I guess, is, you know, from a sustainability perspective, should we have events at all? So I guess, you know, probably an additional question to the panel is, well, How do we balance that public perception and the whole sustainability environment challenges now and really have, you know, that process moving forward that we should have events? John?
Yeah, when I was at Host City last year, I think sustainability was probably for me one of the key outtakes. As a business, you've really got to be focused on a target for a start. So what we've done at AEG is we've committed to being net zero. I know there's a whole lot of different things around net zero, but we're focused on being net zero by 2030. You've really got to make sure that you then put your muscle behind it. So what we did last week is we launched the Green Rider, which is the first time that a venue, this is the O2, has said to incoming productions, if you want to play our venue, whether you're Taylor Swift or Ed Sheeran or Bryan Adams, these are the things that we demand from you as opposed to you demanding from us. So the typical rider is, I want blue M&Ms and whatever. We're now saying, if you're coming into our venue, these are the things that you need to do. You've got to be... I don't know if you know this or not, but about 80% of all the carbon emissions at an event are driven by fan travel. So there is only 20%, I guess, that we can do as the venue or the production. So it's important to highlight to those customers and fans coming in what their responsibilities are as well. So things that we're doing at the O2 is parking is a lot more expensive if you don't drive an EV. We're looking at putting a charge on... customers coming into the venue who are not who are driving. So whether you're parking or not, if you're driving, we're going to put an extra charge on your ticket coming into the venue, and then we're going to use those to drive additional sustainable measures that we're looking at the venue. So, I mean, there's just a couple of things that we're doing. I think the outtake for me is that we have a responsibility as, whether it's host cities or venues, to ensure that we make a mark, we set goals, and then we drive those with real change.
Well, sustainability is an important topic for every event, and it's baked into, I think, all the sport governing bodies and the event management. And in FISU, the World University Games, they have a sustainability committee, and you're required to meet sustainability requirements. And there are interesting ways to do that. And transportation is one of the biggest. In Lake Placid, where they hosted the World University Winter Games in January of this year, they planted over 1,000 trees to try to offset the travel. They had an electric torch rather than a torch that was burning. They had electric buses that took everybody around. So you might not be able to actually prevent some of the things that will create non-sustainable aspects of the event, but you can at least, based on current definitions, be able to try to offset those as much as possible.
Thank you. Okay, so when it comes to, I think, sustainability in our events, we're kind of very much at the embryonic stage, and while we recognize we still have a lot to do, I think our next up-and-coming event, which is the AFCON in Côte d'Ivoire, we've really tried to look at how we do address some of those issues from a very basic level. I think we've talked about, very briefly, procurement and transport. For us, working with local businesses to be more sustainable, we have an enormous youth population across the continent. So when it comes to volunteers, etc., we've also tried to address it in that way also. And I think we can't forget the governing side as well, and the governance, and making sure our bidding, etc., is sustainable also. And I think one thing that we are seeing, which I'm sure we'll touch on again later, is the joint bids. Obviously, Morocco from Africa is now part of a joint bid, and that has a huge impact across the continent simply because flights, etc. If you can fly, the network is not very great in terms of connections. So those are elements that we really have to consider when we're putting on large events.
I think it's a really difficult question, and I think we would all of us sit here and say this is how we're approaching sustainability, and I even mentioned my introduction about Glasgow's approach, you know, and its status in the World Destination Sustainability Index. But that index is much more just than carbon. It's about governance. It's about actually how the city operates. And I think for me that's what's quite interesting. It's not just about the event itself, but it's about the city and the whole city, and actually what is the governance, what are the arrangements, and actually how does the overall city take these kind of things seriously? I don't think there is an answer. I think it is something that we will continue to debate. I think there is a real dilemma there in actually encouraging people to come to our events. But I'll keep coming back to that the values-driven piece for our audience. If as a city you're going to invest millions in a major event, the last people want thing that our audiences want to see is waste. Or that money being wasted, and I do think that whole environmental values-driven piece has to be at the heart of how we engage and discuss the future of events with our audiences.
So let's stay on that then, Susan, and just dig a little bit deeper and talk about how can events return on the values of the host. So in Glasgow, how do you demonstrate to the taxpayer, the city, you know, ratepayers that they're actually getting value from events?
That goes right back to Commonwealth Games time, Paul, and actually the concept that we are hosting the event, we are inviting the world to our city. So how do we talk to our citizens so they then welcome all of those visitors, and how do we make sure that they themselves are invested in the event, they value the event, and for me that's our starting point. And maybe just to give you a little bit of a back to John's point about data, so for the cycling this year, so we've got a long tradition of volunteering. So when the Commonwealth Games came to town in 2014, and we all know there is that volunteering tourism, it's the professional tourisms that toured the world and volunteer at major events. We found that actually none of our citizens were volunteering, none of our citizens were involved in the event in that way. So we created host city volunteers. So those are the people who stood in the corners of the streets with the foam hand saying this way. They're the people who welcomed you and say, are you lost? Do you know where to go? And they had the maps. And actually that's created a huge tradition in the city of host city volunteers. And now right back to the cycling, you will have seen the most diverse group of individuals from across, I think there was 58 different nationalities involved in our volunteering group this year, some with more challenges than others, but all of them were there to welcome visitors to the city. And that's now translated to the World Athletics event. We needed 400 volunteers. We got 1,700 applications. So that, for me, is a way that actually the citizens are adopting, are investing, and are want to welcome people to the city. But actually, you've got to make sure that they know that it is their city, and actually, we've got to invest in their skills development as well.
So, Abby, you talked about youth and young people, and obviously it's a massive cohort in Africa, isn't it, as a continent?
Absolutely.
How are you engaging with that young cohort to take them forward for the future?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the AFCON that we have coming up, I keep referring back to that because you've had a lot of changes within governance and many other things. And a volunteering program is the first time we've always used volunteers in our events. However, this year we've made a really concerted effort to ensure that we involve and we engage with the youth. As I speak, in actual fact, there are workshops going on in Côte d'Ivoire. I think what's really interesting is this time round, we seem to work very closely with the host city, more importantly with the government. Across Africa, there are governments are, I know they're important everywhere, but our stadiums essentially across the continent are owned by governments, not by private entities. Therefore, we have to engage in a very, very different way. And this time around, the government of Côte d'Ivoire have really got behind the notion of the youth and of the volunteering programs. And we've been able to work with organizations such as the UN, and also some smaller organisations on social impact programmes that have really helped. I think what's going to be key is the data afterwards. Historically, across the kind of cities that we work across, they haven't really been able to tap into the data because they haven't collected it in the first place. And this is an area whereby we've tried very hard to make that different this time round. Obviously, we're not going to know what the end results are until the competition's over. However, we have got a lot of you signing up, as you've actually mentioned, for your events. We've had far more engagement than we can cope with. However, what we've done is, again, started to collect data. Historically, CAF have always shipped, or flown, should I say, volunteers across the continent. So if we're hosting in Morocco, you may have various different offices for media, for medical, etc., coming from Cairo, from South Africa. What we've done this time around is try to focus and localize what that looks like. So therefore, when we go back to Cote d'Ivoire for another event in a couple of years' time, we've kept up a whole cohort of volunteers that can actually assist the events that we're doing. And I think that for African football is a really big change this time around. And the other thing I just want to talk about when it comes to the youth and how we've tried to engage them around is our educational programs. Last year, I believe it was, we had the first kind of inaugural of the African Schools Programme. And that was a football championship, but also around the outside of that, we have a media officers programme, we have a refereeing programme, a journalist programme, and it saw a whole group of youth across Africa being involved in these additional programmes. Many of those are now coming to work at AFCON for the first time. So for us, that's a real legacy that we're very proud of and one that we hope to continue as we start to develop our events in the under the new administration. So
Hill, obviously the model for delivery events in North America is very different to Europe. You know, we talked actually very early this morning, 8 o'clock, about the need for commercial income, which obviously is a very different scenario to Europe, where obviously much is very much driven by governments. But how do you engage with young people and maintain that engagement moving forward and build back to the communities, I guess?
Yeah, very fortunately, our event, the World University Games, essentially requires involvement by youth, by definition, college and university age students. And there's a tremendous emphasis not only on the fact that you're going to have college and university athletes from 150 countries and 600 universities participating in the event, but that you engage your local college student population in helping everything from volunteer roles to actual internships and management type roles for the event. One of the neat areas we have in North Carolina that I think is there for student engagement is among our Atlantic Coast Conference universities, each was required in order to be part of the ESPN broadcast network called the ACC Network to build a $10 million broadcast studio. And those studios, while there's a hired professional that runs each of those studios at NC State, UNC, and Duke University's campuses, they're basically run day-to-day by students. And students go out and broadcast, and these are such sophisticated studios that the broadcast goes directly to ESPN to broadcast our collegiate soccer, our women's field hockey, lacrosse, et cetera. And so we're very excited about that, and we think that could even help us with our, we have the national broadcast rights as part of our local organizing committee, and we think that's an attraction to getting a really good broadcaster, hopefully somebody like ESPN, to cover our game. So it'd be a lot of fun and also really engage the students. 20,000 volunteers, we'll also need a lot of students as well.
So John, obviously AEG and O2, both the company and the venue is one of the biggest, best, most successful in the world. What risks do you see over the next 3 to 5 years in terms of your business?
Coming back to the data again, we did some research in the last 6 months, and there's probably 6 key areas of change that we've seen in our business, or 6 trends, call it that way. The first is business is bigger, badder than it's ever been before. I mean, we had a record year in 2022, record year in 2023. We've done away with all the COVID hangover. 2024 is going to be our biggest year ever in terms of live entertainment. So business is back, number one. Secondly, it's more competitive than it's ever been before. There are so many tours out. There is so much demand for entertainment and leisure. And we're competing outside of the live entertainment space. I used the example earlier of Taylor Swift, who's no longer just a superstar on the stage. She's the biggest movie at the moment. I mean, it's phenomenal that that's happened. So the third thing that we're seeing is that it's a lot more expensive than it's ever been. I mean, any of you hosting events or running events will know that your costs are 15, 20, even 30%. I mean, I saw some costs come through yesterday that are 30% up year on year. So it's becoming a lot more expensive to run events than it was previously. You factor that into the competition, it's making business really, really difficult. The fourth thing is customer behavior has changed massively. They demand so much more because, you know, if you're paying £300-400 for a Glastonbury ticket, you're demanding so much more. And what we're finding is that the way that fans are behaving at events is really difficult to manage. You know, any of you running security teams and stuff will know that it's far more fractious at an event than it has ever been before. So, and I think you've got a generation as well. We keep talking about the lost generation. You know, those generations who are 17, 18, 19, it's a big part of our audience, they don't know how to behave at events. And that's difficult for us. The next thing is sponsorship is changing. It's no longer just the big brands that are taking out long-term sponsorships, those key cornerstone sponsorships. Sponsors are coming in and leaving quickly. They're demanding short-term activity. They're brands you've never heard of. I mean, who would have said last year that we would have had GoPuff as a partner at the O2? Crypto.com is now one of the big sponsors of our arena in Los Angeles. It's things that we've never, ever seen before. And then finally, we spoke about sustainability. Not much more to say about that, but if you're not sustainable, your business is not sustainable. It's as simple as that.
Thanks. I'm going to ask each of the panel members one more question, then open it up to the floor for some questions. So starting with Susan on this side, again, you've got a crystal ball. Two questions in one. What would you like to see change in a change perspective? And what do you think will change and present some risks? And the same question to each of the panel members. John sort of started on that debate, but from a host city perspective.
Oh, thank you, Paul, for that one. What, can I start with maybe what will change? I think back to it's more competitive. It's going to cost more, therefore. It's harder to put together the right funding environment to host events. And I think it's interesting to hear from both Hill and John, one Hill from Muir, the commercial side, and actually events have to have a bigger commercial element, but also recognise, as John is saying, that the world of sponsorship has changed forever. It's also not transactional. It's much more values-led as well, and actually sponsors want to understand what difference they will make by investing in your event. So that's kind of what I think will change, and I think that's we still haven't settled on what that's going to look like, and who knows whether we will. But that kind of funding nexus of public funding, commercial funding, sponsorship funding, I think that's going to continue to evolve. In terms of what I would like to change, that's really interesting.
I have a magic wand.
I suppose for me, it is about the accessibility of events. You know, so all of our venues, all of the kind of places that we stage events, you know, have a very traditional format. You need your seating banks, and it's built for people like me that can walk and can climb stairs. I do think I would like to see events being more accessible, welcoming, more diverse people. For me, that a world where anyone can go to any event and they don't even have to think about it or make special arrangements to get into the event. I think that would be my crystal ball.
No, really, really interesting. Great example from my local pub, which is a really rubbish example, but an interesting one. They've just built new female toilets, and they've just built these wonderful disability female toilets, but there's still no ramp to get into the toilets. Absolutely brilliant, because planning didn't require it. Absolutely fascinating. Abby, from your perspective, two things. What do you think will change, and what would you like to change?
Actually, they rolled into one. I'll make it nice and quick. Women's events across the continent, I think, will change. I think we're already seeing the interest that the women's... the WAFCON last year in Morocco, record audiences. I think what will change is that's going to continue to grow. I think the audience that it attracts across the continent are families, which is a really nice proposition for our sponsors, for our partners, and also for a governing body as well, to be able to engage them. So I think that's what it will be for us.
And that's very pertinent. You know, if you look on the back of yesterday's Manchester Derby women's football, first time ever played at Old Trafford, record crowd, and they all had a great day out, and it was a great football match. So, you know, really nice to see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hill?
Well, in terms of what will change, I'd like to... We actually hosted the first mega event, if you want to call it that, back in North Carolina in the 80s, called the U.S. Olympic Festival, which was kind of our country's domestic Olympics for a couple of decades and all. And we did it with five different cities all pitching in to make it happen over a regional area. And it was the first time that event, and it was an event that went to L.A. and St. Louis and Minneapolis and places like that. It's the first time it had been across a multi-city area. Now, this was in the 80s. Now you see that events have progressed to countries, and I think what's happened over time is everybody's realized as the events get bigger and more challenging, it's important to have larger cooperative groups to do that. And then back to your point about commercial investment, we've already done some significant sponsor pitches to get partners involved in our games. And to your point earlier, what we're definitely see happening, and I have to make a major presentation to a very large financial institution that's national and international in the U.S. tomorrow, and they said, here are the two areas that are our priorities. And one is diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the other is young people's education. And so the good news is we won't go in with a pitch that is all over the place. And but I thought, so that's what you're seeing, I think, along corporate lines is, and that will continue to change, I think, and evolve, where corporations will set specific areas for you to concentrate in. As far as what I'd love to see change, I'd love to see the politics get out of sport, but then, you know, that would be, you know, a dream that nobody would ever see. And, you know, as we all know from being in this room, probably the politics of sports are harder than even regular politics. But I recently spent 2 years getting the state of North Carolina's legislature and governor to award us what hopefully will be about 20% of our budget. And, you know, at the end of that period, was just went till November 1st of this year. I was thinking, well, maybe the event will be easier than working with these guys. So I know that's a wish that won't come true, but that's my wish.
So just before you finish, what's your projected budget for 29?
Yes, it's $136 million, which FISU keeps telling us is too low, but I keep telling them you've been used to dealing with national and federal governments for every event you've ever done. We operate like we're minor league baseball. Everybody does everything. We're very entrepreneurial. We'll be lean and mean, and I think we can get it done for that.
That seems really reasonable. Yeah. John?
What is changing? Everything's changing. I can't pinpoint one thing. And the thing I said earlier is you've just got to stay on top of the data. You've got to be aware of the risks. You've got to have research out there all the time, because before you know it, something else is changing. So we're constantly changing. I think to your second question, what would I like to see change? I really would like to see a lot more people doing work around sustainability. I'd like to see governments more behind it. I'd like to see everybody setting targets and pulling towards a sustainable future. Because I think if we wait for the politicians, we're going to be waiting around forever, and our children are not going to have a future.
Okay, we've got some time to open it up to the floor. There's the first question up there. I think we're going to use some microphones, I think. If you could say who you are and where you're from, please, that would be great. Just up on the right.
Lucky. No problem. Okay, Anthony, I'm in Orange County, California. So question specifically about earlier this year, I was reading a trade publication called Sportico in North America. They published a report that talked about specifically Generation Z. So that's the youngest generation for everybody in the room to know. So think about like maybe 21 and younger. And one of the things that they published in that report was only about 18% of Generation Z in America actually attended a sporting event last year. 51% attended a rave or a festival. So my question to you specifically is, what are you guys doing to engage that youngest generation, whether it be into your events or that you're seeing some of the other organizations do to kind of attract them, since it's a different breed out there?
Thanks. Do you want to start, John?
Yeah, it's an easy answer for me. Because we're in mostly live entertainment and music, we tend to be picking up a lot of that generation, so I can't really talk to the sports side so much. But I guess if I had to answer, it's more about being relevant. And I don't know what is or isn't relevant about certain sports, but I think our response has to be to innovate to ensure that we're targeting that generation.
Yeah, for us, one of the ways to get them engaged is we're putting them to work on in our organization as interns and as volunteers and all thus far, and we plan on growing that. Additionally, we want to have student ambassadors for our games to assist and help broaden that reach as well. But yes, we acknowledge that's a challenge, and so we're trying to tackle that early on. We're just getting out of the blocks. We were just awarded the event earlier this year, but we're excited about that challenge.
Yeah, relevance, I think, is really key. For us, I think the great thing that we're looking at and we can mix is sport and music. On the continent of Africa, as some of you may know, we have a genre of music called Afrobeats, which is huge and essentially taking over popular music at the moment. A lot of those stars are obviously on the continent, along with how we mix in our legends who are playing for many leagues across the world, but predominantly in Europe. So that for us is a really big key, is making sure that we can bring culture, music, staying relevant, and making it all one big event to celebrate what we do across the continent.
It's about legacy and impact. So back to maybe some of the things I touched on earlier. So for the World Cycling this year, we were working for years in the city leading up to the event. The city allocated an activation budget, which is about it, making sure that it impacts that Generation Z who actually get on their bikes. So we worked with youth groups across the city who maybe didn't have access to bikes. We worked with community organisations, visited one where actually set up a bike repair centre in one of the community centres. We worked with school children, we worked with refugees, all about getting access to bikes. We even had a tandem a group working with people with visual impairments. So actually it's literally going out there and actually doing some of that really ground community work that are linked to events, and then when the event does come into town, then your younger people understand, well, yeah, let's go and have a look. And I think we can demonstrate in Glasgow that people did, and young people came out in their hundreds of thousands to watch it.
Another question?
Okay. Thank you. All right, is that true? Is this an actual mic? All right. Well,
if you could say who you are and where you're from.
Yes. So it's Beatrice Garcia. I'm Director of Research on Cultural Policy and Mega Events, and I'm a member of the Culture and Heritage Commission at the IOC. My question is for John specifically. You have been referring to the importance of data and building on data. I'm very glad to hear that. And we have mountains of numbers and statistics out there. But is there any qualitative data that you trust? I don't know what kind, because it's harder to manage that. And what is, if there is anything that you feel is starting to reveal something on this qualitative front, something surprising that maybe this is telling you and that maybe could be adapted or replicated elsewhere? Thank you.
Yeah, it's easy to forget qualitative data. For me personally, the most important qualitative data is actually to be at events and to wander around. I mean, I will go to as many events as I possibly can and just talk to the crowd. Something I do at some of our arenas sometimes, or those where they speak English, because not all of the arenas I look after are English-speaking arenas, is I'll go and work at the information desk. So I'll just work at the night information desk and talk to people about what their issues are, what their problems are, because without that qualitative interaction, two-way interaction with people, unfortunately what you're just getting is a snapshot of the hard quantitative data, which you write does have issues. So it's And then the second thing, which is probably a bit more structured, what we do is we use the quantitative data first. Once we start to pick out things that we feel we need to explore a little bit more, we do loads of focus groups.
Thank you. Thanks, Beatrice. I think going back to my earlier comment about I would encourage everyone in this room to become a punter or a consumer, because I think it's really important, because again, from a Rugby World Cup perspective, it was really interesting. Access and egress, the experience was interesting. I would not be critical in a public environment. Access to toilets was interesting, and access to food and beverage was very interesting. Next question. Yeah, we've got Joel.
Thanks, Paul. Joel, excuse me, Joel Avery from Birmingham, West Midlands. I'm very interested, Abby, in what you just said about sports and entertainment and the fusion between the two, and with other panel members in this area of entertainment, particularly John, you know, AEG. What do you think the future of that is and the implications on our industry? I did hear a new word, sportertainment, being used quite regularly now. So just interested in the thoughts of the panel.
I was very fortunate enough to work in 2012 at the Indian Premier League. When they moved out of India, they had to move to South Africa for the tournament. And it was the first time ever that I'd actually seen the entertainment almost bigger than the sport. And I think that's partly a way to attract new and different audiences, is you can't just put on the sport event and assume that that is going to be the spectacle. It's everything around that. And even though I'm not in mainstream sport, what I see come through the O2 or our other arenas is continually amazing me about how the boundaries are being pushed beyond the sport, and it's everything that leads up to it and that's around it. So whether it's the Laver Cup or the NBA, it's the entertainment that is just as much a part of the attraction as the sport is. What I always say about the entertainment is you know what you're going to get. You know if you're going to Taylor Swift, you know exactly what you're going to get. You've probably seen the set list. You know how you're going to feel about it. Where with sport, that's not always the case. You know, half the pundits normally leave feeling shit about the event. And I don't know what that says about sport. I mean, I'm a huge sport lover, but I just think that the competition is no longer sport versus entertainment. It's we're all competing in the leisure market. We're competing against Netflix and Amazon and sport on TV. I didn't go to the Rugby World Cup because I chose to stay at home, actually, and to watch it on TV. I'd had a ticket, but I just thought the issue of going out there, struggling with egress and whatever, I thought I can sit at home and watch it on a high-definition TV, and for me, that's a better experience than at the venue. I shouldn't be saying that as somebody in live entertainment, but... It just goes to show what we're competing with and how we need to go beyond the ordinary boundaries to attract people to our events.
John's right in his assumption of Paris. I think the interesting thing for me as well in Paris was that they didn't change the metro timetable because it's France and they don't. So you had to wait 17 minutes for the first metro to leave the ground to go back into the centre of the city. And some people were an hour on the RER. So it's quite interesting. It'd be interesting to see what they do for the Olympics next summer, whether they actually do change. We've got time for one more question. Yes, we've got one over there.
Hi, it's Len Olander with Sports World. We do packages to things like you're talking about. And it's about, I guess, some of the politics involved. The risk for us for sustainability is strike action on event days. And it throws our ISO right out the window, and it makes risk a part of our decision-making when we're deciding which country or which city to use. Certainly France and the UK are not really safe options at the moment. So I guess maybe for John and Susan, how do you address that for us?
I mean, I think for Susan, that was very relevant because we had strike action during the Cycling World Championships.
And Paul's absolutely right. And my experience in 2014 is we almost had strike action as well. So I presume if you were in Glasgow during the World Cycling, you might not have even noticed that we had strike action. So we are a very experienced host city, very experienced in terms of the venues that we are responsible for and that are part of the event delivery. We have, it's always on our risk register, but I think we've got a track record of managing industrial relations, including the impact of strike action. And I suppose your question is then broader than that, and there has been obviously industrial action in terms of transport. That is very difficult, and it is an unknown. There's nothing that we can do really to mitigate that, except I suppose help our audiences be flexible and look at making sure that we tell people how to get information, but how to get there, other ways of getting there, and we work very closely with train companies, bus companies, airlines. So it has to be, I suppose, we call it the Team Glasgow approach. And so if we are affected and something we don't have direct control over, I would say Glasgow's a trustworthy host city.
Before I hand it to John, I'd just like you to come to North Carolina. We're the number one right to work and least unionized state in the entire United States.
Just quickly from my side, you know, strike action is one of the risks that we have to deal with. We're a private operator. We are not really in a position to be able to negotiate the industrial relation side of things, so we need to react and respond to it. And, you know, if we take the O2, for instance, we've had numerous strike actions, whether it's TFL or national train strikes that have affected us. That means we put on buses. It means we communicate better. It means we communicate more in advance. It means we need to do everything we can to ensure that the event goes ahead. You know, the event always goes ahead. I think that's the mantra. We just got to make it happen. And, you know, whether it's strike action or the threat of terror, it's just one of those things that we just have to deal with and respond to.
Thanks, John. Just before we close, I'd just like to welcome Sir Craig Reedy down at the front, who's a long-standing supporter of this event. Thank you, Craig, for your appearance this morning. Nice to see you. I hope you've all found that interesting. Certainly I have. Some key takeaways for me, obviously around data relevance, innovation. Change is constant, and if you don't change, you're going to get killed. And the whole thing around sustainability, diversity, accessibility, and making sure that we are relevant to young people. Fascinating for me. We've had a very, very diverse group there. I'd like to thank John from AEG, from Hill, from FISU, Abby all the way from Cairo in Africa, and Susan here from Glasgow Life. Thank you very much.